In Conversation with Uaisí Fógarty on Radio Kerry.
Hello there, and you're very welcome to the programme, and you can contact us now if you want, and I've no doubt there are people out there will want to contact us. You can, Tanya's waiting for your call in 066 712 3666, or you can text us on 083 300 3300. Uaisí Fógarty with you as usual until 7 o'clock. Well, last week I was in conversation with a group of ladies about their new publication entitled The Essence of Sneem, which will be launched in the Sneem Hotel next Saturday by Kerry football legend and Sneem native John Egan. So that's been launched, The Essence of Sneem, in the Sneem Hotel on next Saturday by the great, the one and only John Egan at 8 o'clock. Next week, then, I'll be in conversation with a group of Kerry people about the Kerry London Immigrants Association, a very special group of people. But to this evening, and I'm absolutely delighted to have as my guest a man who last year, on May the 28th, wrote his name into the pages of Kerry and Irish history when he climbed to the summit of Mount Everest, thus becoming the very first Kerry man to achieve this phenomenal achievement. John Dowd, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you, Uaisí.
Great to have you, John.
Thank you. Come here.
You're born and bred in Waterville, or just outside it in Tarmans, is that right?
That's right, yeah. Just 2 miles from the village.
Yeah.
A place called Tarmans, overlooking Loch Carron, and surrounded by mountains there.
Yeah. Surrounded by mountains. Yeah. Well said. Come here, the Dowds were, you're down there for generations, are you?
We are there maybe 3 generations, I think,
yeah,
at the moment. I think we first came down with Dan O'Connell's people. I think your great grandfathers were horsemen, yeah, and they just settled in that area. So I think that's how the Dowds came to South Kerry.
John, what has it been like since you summited Everest, since you've come back, like, and how have people taken you?
I suppose they look at me more serious now, I suppose, than they would be before. But everything is the same, really. Life goes on the same, really. Just take it easy, like, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk to us about your own family, your wife, and your son is taken after you, by the way.
He is, Mary O'Shea,
yeah,
from Octave.
Yeah.
And she was only 7 miles out the road from me, so...
You didn't go near the mountains, too?
Well, she was from the mountain area, so...
Does she climb the mountains, by the way?
She does a little, yeah.
And your son, then, what's his name?
Gabriel.
Gabriel is taking after you, isn't he?
He is, yeah. Gabriel is quite interested in the outdoors. Well, so is my eldest daughter, Rebecca. But Gabriel has travelled to meet with me to Elbrus in Russia 2 years ago. And since then, he have done a lot of climbing in South America. And he's a keen rock climber.
Yeah.
And he just after coming back now from Mount McKinley in Alaska.
Yeah. Does he do that free, is it called the free climbing, is it?
Yeah.
Does he, yeah? That stuff where they're hanging off the side of a mountain with nothing holding him up?
Oh, he is a safety climber, yeah. He uses the rope.
Yeah. And you have 2 daughters,
I make sure he does, yeah.
Yeah.
I have 2 daughters, yeah.
Rebecca and Imelda. And Imelda, yeah. Lovely stuff. Now, I met you for the first time last Thursday night. We were down in Tickamagran,
yeah,
down in Waterville, where there was you were shown a fabulous slideshow,
yeah,
and Mick Murphy, the great cyclist,
right,
there was a photographic exhibition open for him. That was a great night, wasn't it,
yeah,
John?
That's right, yeah. Mick is an amazing man, yeah. He was telling me that he used to, when he was training for De Ross, he used to cycle 100 miles a day, 50 in the morning, and he would go away to work and come back in the evening and do another 50.
Yeah.
And that was just for training.
Yeah.
Every day of the week.
Yeah. Susan, the lady in charge of the camera, gone down there. It's a fabulous building, John. It's a great...
It's fantastic. It's a major achievement for the people in Waterville, like, you know, to get this organised, especially in to, Susan and her company there.
And that photographic exhibition is running at the moment. It'll be there for 3 weeks.
I believe so, yeah.
Any listeners, yeah, around, drop in and see that photographic exhibition because it's well worth seeing. John, what got you into the mountain climbing in the first place?
That's a hard question to answer, really. But I suppose growing up in a place where, like, if Tarmans there, being surrounded by mountains, I suppose you just only have to look at the mountains and you get that edge to go,
yeah,
and climb them, sort of. And... things like that, I suppose.
But you got involved in mountain rescue too, did you?
What did you? First of all, I joined the Clannagh Mountaineering Club.
Yeah.
And I progressed then on to the rescue team. And I suppose it was from there, really, I got the urge to do some climbing, like, you know.
Yeah.
Because you're meeting very experienced people, especially in the rescue team, like, and you learn all these skills, the mountaineering, rope skills and all this type of thing. And I suppose that can really pushes you on, like, you know.
That was vital
It is vital, yeah.
In your advancement, yeah.
It is, yeah.
Yeah. Were you involved in a lot of mountain rescues?
Well, I have been, yeah, over the years now. I suppose in the rescue team now, maybe 13 years or so.
Yeah.
So we have done a lot of rescues, like, yeah.
But, I mean, you have done a lot of climbing before you came to Everest, haven't you? Give us an outline, John.
Oh, I have, yeah. Where
you have been and what you have done.
Well, I have been in Alaska twice, in McKinley. I have been in the Tinshan Mountain Range, which is in Kyrgyzstan. That's the northern Himalayan range. I've been in Antarctica. And then I have been in the Alps, of course, twice. And, of course, I have a lot of climbing done in the Alps. And, indeed, of course, Scotland.
Would you be involved with other groups of people going there now, John, or how do you...
Oh, yeah, we would have outings with our club, Killarney Mountaineering Club. We would have different outings, with, especially to Scotland and to the Alps and things like that. Yeah. Yeah. So...
And your mountain rescue work, that was a huge help to you for all these...
Oh, it was, yeah.
And where else have you travelled then?
Of course, the Himalayas. I've been there now twice. And South America, the Andes.
Yeah.
I've been there. And there are a few more places I'd like to go.
Yeah. When was your first trip outside of Ireland, by the way?
Oh...
Roughly?
Oh, that must have been back in... 1945 or something like that, maybe.
Yeah, so that's when
we did Mount Blanc, I think was the first time.
Yeah.
The first major mountain I did.
Yeah. And John, when you did Mount Blanc, when you were preparing for that, at the end of it all, was Mount Everest in your thoughts at all at this stage when you were starting off?
It would have been there on the back of my mind, all right, but it was never a serious thought about with me, like, you know, but I suppose as I progressed with 7,000 metre peaks, I suppose, and then I took a shot at an 8,000 metre peak in Pakistan, and I suppose it was from that then I really thought that, you know, I had a good chance of going to Everest, like, you know. I was kind of well prepared for it, like.
And were you conscious of the fact before you started your climbing, before you, that no Kerryman had ever did this?
I was, yeah. I was being reminded of that when I went to Pakistan, because there was no Kerryman, I don't think, had ever done it in 8,000 metre peak.
Wasn't there?
Yeah, and so...
Do we know of anyone, John, that had attempted it? What other mountain climbers came from? Big mountain climbers?
I'm sure they were.
Came from Kerry. Do you know of anybody?
I don't actually know, not of anybody who was in 8,000 metre peak range, like, but there are a lot of fellas who were in the... And the rescue team now have a lot of mountains climbed, you know.
Yeah.
And they would have attempted 8,000 metre peaks as well, but...
Yeah. And of course, Pat Falvey,
who's
resident in Kerry,
that's
course,
right,
and we consider him an adopted Kerry man, even though he is a Corkman by birth.
That's right, he might like to be called a Corkman.
Do you know, that's a good question. I wonder what does he like to be called, a Kerry man or a Corkman? And of course, Pat Falvey, of course, he would have had a big bearing in your career, would you?
I guess he would. I was lucky enough to be with Pat in two expeditions, like, especially to...
highly experienced.
Yeah, to Alaska and to Antarctica.
Yeah.
They were two great expeditions, yeah. I think the Antarctica one was the worst one I'd been on, I suppose. We just got such a thrashing from the storms and stuff. You know, to the first place my tent was ever shredded by storm. And then Pat was with us that time, so it was a great help to have an experienced person with you on that type of an experience, you know.
You're a builder by trade, John.
Yeah.
You'd be away, of course, you'd be away from work. These trips would keep you away a long time, wouldn't they?
They do, yeah. Yeah. I mean, an 8,000 metre peak would keep you away maybe 6-7 weeks.
Yeah.
It's a big commitment, you know.
Yeah. We've so much to talk about. We've so much to discuss and so much to talk about, because just to let our listeners know about Mount Everest, I think in one particular year, I mentioned the last night when we were below on Tick Amagran, in one particular year, I think there were 16 people killed off of Everest.
Was that 2006? It was, 1996, yeah.
Yeah.
It was two expeditions that were caught high in the mountains at the time. They were making their return from the summit. And, I suppose there's a lot of confliction about it, like, but I think they were there too long, too late in the day, and they were unprepared or whatever. And one team was led by Ron Hall, and the other was led by American. And they were just happened to be get caught out in the storm late in the evening, and seven of them died that evening, making their way off from the summit. And I think that year, 15 people died in the mountain that year. Yeah. It was a tough year, nervous, yeah.
And would there be a share of people dying every year, John? Is there any year goes by?
No, there's always some accidents in Everest, yeah.
Yeah.
Even this year now, there was a shepherd killed in the icefall this year, yeah. Which is a dreaded part of Everest, really. Yeah.
Come here, what's your first choice of music?
I'm kind of a... I'm a music lover. I love most music, really, but I'm kind of stuck in the 60s. But
same as myself. Yeah, welcome and, to the club.
But I just like, you know, whiskey in the jar there for my mountaineering friends with either Thin Lizzy or something like that.
Lovely. Yeah. 066-712-3666 or 083-300-3300. Here we go. Thin Lizzy for John O'Dowd and all his mountaineering friends. Welcome back to the programme, 066-712-3666, or you can text us on 083-300-3300. I'm talking to John Dowd, the waterfall man who summited the top of the world on the 21st of May, 08, the first and only Kerry man to reach the top of Everest. Ger Cronin from Waterfall was on. Congratulations to John and his family on his wonderful achievement. We are thinking of putting up a monument alongside Charlie Chaplin in Waterfall of John. You're slightly taller than Charlie Chaplin anyway. Thank you for that, Jordan. I got your message, my friend. So, John, on the 21st of May, 08, you summited. When did you begin your actual preparations, and when did it enter into your mind, and when did you decide, I'm going to have a go at Everest?
I think it would have been in 96. I kind of got a serious thought about preparing myself from there. So, I went from 96, then I went to Pakistan to try an 8,000-metre peak, which is Broad Peak, which is relatively easy of the 8,000-metre peaks. And there's 14 of them in the country, so or in the world. So Broad Peak is relatively one of the easiest ones, so I said I'd try that and see how they get on. And I summited that pretty easy, so it was after that, really, then I decided that I was going for Everest then.
Yeah. And in the meantime then, John, in the run-up to when you started, what had you to do? Is was there a lot of training, preparations, and of course sponsorship? It is very expensive.
It is, yeah.
Sport which you're in. Is it a sport, by the way?
It is a sport, yeah.
You're right.
It is a sport. Since way back in the 50s, I think the English climbers were responsible for registering it as a sport.
Yeah.
But I suppose sponsorship is very quite difficult to get nowadays because of, I suppose, economic climate and so on. But I was lucky enough. I've a lot of building friends, and I got sponsors from some builders, local builders, and a local painter gave me some sponsorship. And it was Foss. I got some sponsorship from Foss. So I gathered up a bit, but not 100%. Like, but it was all the great help, like, you know. And my training would be. Would be fairly intense for at least 6 months before you take on something like Everest. Like, I suppose I would do Cairn Toul at least once a week, and I would be climbing locally in the hills local, maybe during the week and so on, and I'd evening on the bike and stuff like that.
Yeah. Would you consider Cairn Toul now just a kind of a short step?
Yeah, it would be quite easy now at this stage.
By the way, Tanya's taking our calls here tonight. Tanya's below the reception. And when I came in, you were in before me. And Tanya said to me, God, wish I'm after making an awful idiot myself. I say, why not? She said, John O'Dowd, the mountain men who climbed Everest came in. And I didn't recognise him. And I said to him, do you want to take the lift upstairs? Was that an insult, John?
No, it wasn't. I know that.
Do you want to take the lift?
No, I chose the stairs.
So come here. You had to team up then, of course, with other people, hadn't you? How did you get teamed up with a group of people?
There are several groups. There are mountain guides, or I suppose expedition leaders, going to Everest year after year. Like, so, and I just priced around with them. Like, you can pay from maybe 50 grand down to 15. So I took the lowest one, which was led by his American. Dan Mazur, he was the cheapest, and he had a good reputation on the mountain, so he was quite safe. And there was a friend of mine before from Killarney who was with this particular man in Everest previous year, and he was quite pleased with him, and he was quite happy with his safety record and so on. So I chose Dan to go with Dan Mazur, and that was roughly about 15 grand cost.
Yeah. And then, John, I saw by the slideshow the last night that you gave below, there was a packed crowd watching the slideshow. Fantastic stuff. Mm-hmm. From before you reached the first base camp, when you started your mountain climb, it's a long ways into the base camp, and it's a tough, you can't take a horse, you can't take a mule, and the people have to carry all the building material in their backs. It's fairly rough.
That's right, yeah, that is pretty rough, yeah. It's 35 miles of a track where you get flown into a place called Lucre, and you have to track from there, and then it's roughly about 35 miles onto the base of Everest, and everything has been taken in on the backs. Yeah, we were using mules for our transport of your stuff, but the locals and all their tea houses, which has gone up for the tourist trade and so on, everything like that is brought in the backs, and even the building material is brought in. There are some few mules there that will be bringing in cement and stuff like that for buildings, but most of it is brought in the backs, and yeah. It's pretty...
For the uninitiated like myself, John, there's such a thing first as the base camp, and then there's the second base and
stuff. Right, yeah.
Explain to us about
that. Yeah, there's roughly five different stages in climbing the mountain. Like, first would be base camp, and you would set up base camp is roughly 5,200 metres, and you will work the mountain from there. Well, then you have five stages from there. Then you have first stage would be getting up to camp one. Then you'd have camp two, camp three, and camp four. And your final and fifth stage then would be from camp four to the summit.
But you have to move all the gear from base camp up to the next one. There's an awful lot of work in it, isn't there?
That's right, yeah. It is a very slow process, yeah, because you're actually climbing the mountain maybe up to camp three at least, maybe four times. Because you're going up, coming down, and you're kind of moving all your gear up and making sure that you have plenty of equipment and food and stuff up, and especially up at Camp 2, where we would call Advanced Base Camp. So that we have a good supply there, that if the weather ever broke and that you were held up there, you have all your supplies up there. Sort of.
So, John, physically and mentally, you have to be very fit, don't you?
Oh, you do. It's important to be fit for this, because you'll enjoy it more. The fitter you are, the more you'll enjoy. You know, if you're unfit, you will suffer badly.
Yeah. How long were you at base camp before you moved up to the second?
We rested base camp for 4 days.
Yeah.
And when we were kind of happy enough in base camp where we wouldn't be experiencing headaches or any nausea or anything like that, so we said that we were acclimatized for this altitude, so we started to move higher then.
Oh, you're acclimatized the whole way
that's
up
right,
along. What about food, and what type of food would you have?
Down in base camps, we had a lot of fresh food because there was an endless supply of it coming up all the time, fresh veg and potatoes and all this type of thing, maybe meat and stuff. But up high then, we would be using pastas. Yeah. Freeze-dried food and tins of tuna and stuff like that.
And there's a great ritual, John, I saw on the slideshow, a great ritual by the local Sherpas and their priests in relation to blessing everyone that climbs the mountain.
Yeah, that's right. They're extremely holy, that they would never go near the mountain without getting the proper blessing and stuff, you know. They're extremely holy people there.
Yeah.
And they respect the mountain enormously, like they're...
Yeah. So from base, you were okay getting up to base camp, everything went grand, no problems? How was the weather?
It was quite good, actually.
Yeah,
we were experiencing a few, as we were getting higher on the mountain, we were experiencing a few blizzards and things like that, but nothing serious. Like,
How long did it take to move all the gear from base camp up to the second, would you call it the second base?
Up to advanced base camp.
Second camp two. Yeah, camp two. How long did it take to move it again?
About 3 weeks.
3 weeks?
3 weeks, yeah. But we would be resting in between, making sure that we were climatizing properly. Like, you know, you can't push high fast.
Yeah.
You have to take it as a gradual stage. Like.
Was the weather very favourable for you?
It was, yeah, it really was. We had, just when we got to, from camp 2 to 3, that's when the weather really started to turn. And it's like, but then when we got higher again on the mountain, we were extremely lucky. When we needed the good weather, we got it, like, so that's what helped us.
How long did you spend in the second camp?
We were there maybe 5 days. Would be the most we'd be trapped there.
Yeah.
But we would be going up and dropping supplies and sleeping there maybe and coming back down again to base camp to rest for another day and then do the same procedure again.
So it is all about acclimatization, isn't it?
John? It is, yes. That's important.
How were you feeling when all this was going on?
Quite good, actually, yeah. Because you were getting the odd headaches and stuff like that, like, but I was... Really was good.
Yeah. Were you sleeping and everything?
No, sleeping was very broken. You could never get beyond maybe 2 or 3 hours in a night. Like, you know, your sleeping is very, very broken.
Yeah. Also, I see where you had loads of, of course, you'll have to have oxygen in the mountain.
Yeah.
But the oxygen cylinders, John, they're very, very heavy.
They are, yeah.
How many of those did you bring?
They weigh roughly around 2.5 kgs, and we had something over 200 of them.
Wow.
Between the team of, maybe a team of 30 maybe.
So you were moving those up and down. Do you know what struck me watching the slideshow? In this day and age, isn't it amazing that they haven't lighter material for the oxygen?
Yeah.
John.
And these are the lightest you can get. They're carbon fibre bottles now, and they're way, way lighter than what they would have in the old days, what Hillary would have.
Yeah.
They would be double the weight.
Yeah. So before you went to Summit, how many camps you had? Base camp, and you had
camp one, camp two, advanced base camp,
yeah,
and camp three,
yeah.
And four was up in the South Call,
yeah,
and that was the final one.
Do you know, we want to talk about that when we come back. What's your second choice of music?
We can go for
Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce Springsteen, yeah.
Anything special you want to hear him singing?
Not really, no. I'm a good fan of, and my wife is a good fan of Bruce as well, so we can have this for my wife, so.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Nation with Wishy Fogarty on Radio Kerry. In conversation with Wishy Fogarty on Radio Kerry.
Yes, indeed, you're very welcome back to the programme. John Dowd is my special guest. He's the man, the Kerry man, the only Kerry man to summit Mount Everest on the 21st of May, 08-0667123666. Or you can tweet text us on 083-300-3300. A lot of people phoning up, John. Congratulations to John from all his friends in the Kerry Mountain Rescue. There's a few big mountains left in him yet, from Mick Long. There you are. Thank you, Mick. Congratulations to John and his family and his great achievement. Tim and Sheila Galvin from Emlock. Thank you, Tim and Sheila. And Foley Collardon says, John, Anne's first cousin is doing the Inca Trail in Peru in September in aid of the autism group. Any tips?
Plenty of training before she goes and stack up and the carbohydrates.
Breeden, John Foley of Waterville, congratulations to John. The slideshow was amazing and we are all very proud of you. And it was, John. Well done. The slideshow and everybody down in Tikamagon. Mm. Well done to them down there. John, you reach Camp 4. Your next stop was the summit of Mount Everest.
That's right,
how many were in the group? Did they all reach Camp 4 and did sickness strike you?
Well, the group, our group, there were 18 members. They were drawn from international group, really. They were Americans, English, Hong Kong. They were South African, because I was the only Irish. But we had rested for 10 days due to the fact that we were not allowed to go to the summit before the 10th of May. And we were all back down base camp for roughly 10 days waiting for this to happen. And
you had to go back up again?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, and we had to go back up again. And there was only five of us that were first out of the traps, we'll say. We were the fittest group, so we were five out of the 18. We were the first to leave base camp for the summit. They were sick, and people would have all different ailments, really.
Yeah.
But upset stomachs is probably a very common one. Like,
were you feeling good?
Yeah, at the time I was. Yeah. And there was five of us. Then we decided that we would go for it. And
talk to us now. Bring us through what time you left and what happened.
We left base camp at 4 in the morning, and we got through the ice field first, hoping that there was a good freeze up and that it was the crevasses were fairly solid and stuff like that. So we got up through the ice field and then on to we bypassed camp 1 and on to 2, and then we rested on 2 overnight, and we went from there on to 3, camp 3, and we slept there again. And we took off there then late in the afternoon up to camp 4, and we rested there for three hours, and then the weather forecast we had was pretty good, and we decided that we would stay going. And
were you using oxygen when we were at camp 4?
We were using oxygen. We rested in camp 3 with oxygen, and then we went to camp 4 then, and we went on it full time then.
Talk to us now about from Camp 4 up, John.
We went on oxygen then from there. We rested there on oxygen for 4 hours, and we took off at 8 o'clock in the evening, and we climbed through the night. It was dark, like, because we were using our head torches, like, but we climbed through the night. And just as it was dawning at 7:30 in the morning, we were actually on the summit. And we were actually the fourth up onto the summit that particular morning. There was two shepherds ahead of us and an Argentinian climber, and we were the fourth. I was the fourth, and the rest of my team members were coming up behind me, and we stood there for maybe about 20 minutes or so, and then the rest of the people were coming up on us. There was something like 70 that summited on that particular day.
70?
Yeah, and we just got off the summit and just for space, because, you know, you only about maybe 6-7 people can stand there at any one time. So we moved back down before the...
What was it like, John, standing in the top of the world? What did it mean to you? What was the view like? What was the atmosphere like? And how did you feel?
I was feeling quite good, I suppose, really, but was, of course, extremely tired. You would feel a bit confused as well, like, and it's a very frightening place to be, because you were reminded of that on the way up, especially on the south face, because you would be, well, not step you over anything, but there would be something inside of the track that would remind you of, if anything goes wrong up here, like, you know, you could wind up on the same.
Is it true, John, that people die in the mountain, the lift there?
That's right, yeah. Well, particularly beyond Camp 4. It's your chance of being recovered from there is pretty slim. And you'd be reminded of that on the south face, so you'd be very careful. And it frightens you, like, you know.
What was the view like?
Oh, the view was fantastic because we had a beautiful day there, like, and we could see for miles, like. I believe you can see up to 300 miles across the Tibetan Plateau. And you can see the east and west, the Himalayan range. And it's just beautiful, yeah.
You spoke about the crevices. The crevasses or the crevasses you'd call
yeah.
it, where the snow separates and it leaves a deep, deep pit.
Right.
You use leathers to walk across those. If you fell into one of those, of course, tis a good night, Irene, isn't it?
It is, yeah, exactly. They're just black holes, like, you know.
Yeah. What about the climbing then, all the special gear you have?
Yeah. I suppose those crevasses, we use leathers in those because of the fact that if it takes so long to get around them, like, you know, yeah. that it was easier just to get a ladder and cross them. And
were you elated, John, when you stood on the top of Mount Everest? Did you say to yourself, I'm here?
Oh, I guess I did, yeah.
What were you thinking of? Were you thinking of home?
Well, that's the first thing that went into your mind. Like, you know, you were concentrating on getting to the summit before you get there. And then all of a sudden, then you get to the summit and you're suddenly thinking of home from that point on.
Yeah.
You know, getting off the mountain safely and returning home because we were there 6 weeks at this stage on the mountain. So,
yeah. Can you work a mobile from the top of Mount Everest?
You can now. Well, not mobile now, but of course we have all set phones nowadays and you can just have an instant contact with home at any stage, like, you know.
Yeah. Amazing stuff. John, what's your final choice of music?
We go for Bob Seger, I think, for a lot of my mates are like the 60 music, so we give them something like
that. His favourite of yours?
He is, yeah.
Will you listen to any music on the mountain?
Not particularly, no. We were reading books a lot and stuff like that.
What was your favourite book?
Into Thin Air is one of them, hardly enough. And books like that, they would kind of...
Yeah, lovely stuff. Yeah. We'll listen to this, John. From the concrete canyons to the midtown lights where the latest neon promises are. The bad designs and the dilettantes with their open minds. You're out on the town, safe in the crowd, ready to go for the ride. Searching the eyes, looking for clues, there's no way you can hide. The fire inside. Well, you've been to the clubs and the discotheques where they from the bottom of the deck of promises, where the cautious loners and emotional wrecks do an acting stretch as a way to hide the obvious. And the lights go down and they dance real close, and for one brief instant they pretend they're louder and the moon is gone. The darkness scatters as the lights flash on. They hold one another just a little too long, and they move apart and then move on. On to the street, on to the next.
In conversation with Wishy Fogarty on Radio Kerry. In conversation with Wishy Fogarty on Radio Kerry.
You're very welcome back to the final part of the programme. John Dowd is my special guest in studio tonight. He's the man who reached the top of the world on the 21st of May, 0808. John Coakley from Milton was on. John, well done in all your achievements and the very best in the future. Margaret, Jimmy and O'Shea family and family in Waterville, congratulations to John. Thank you from Margaret and Jimmy. Gerald and Noreen Shukru, Waterville, best wishes to John. Your niece Tina and Tommy, best wishes to John. Mom, brother, Michael, four sisters, Katrina, Geraldine, Mary and Debbie. Well done, John. We're all very proud of you. That's all your own family?
Exactly. Yeah.
And listen, folks, well, you should be proud of him. What a remarkable achievement. And you should be very, very proud of him. And I think that statue will have to go up down there for him. Congratulations, John, on his wonderful achievements to date. Tony, Helena, Donnelly and family in Waterville. Thank you for that. 0667123666, 083-300-3300. If you want to get in very fast, you'd want to be doing it now. John, would you go back and climb Mount Everest again?
Maybe not Mount Everest, because I suppose it is quite expensive, but I would like to try another 8,000 metre peak in another area or another mountain range, so yeah. I would rather do that, really.
Yeah. The fact that you reached, that you summited Everest, you stood on the top of the world, has it made any change in your in your thinking, any change in your life? Has it made any change in that respect?
I suppose it would have, yeah. It certainly will give you the urge to go and climb more mountains, I suppose, really. But the mountains are so expensive now, and with the economic downturn and so on, I suppose it will slow one down. But
I suppose, as the fella said, if a bit of sponsorship came along, could you do it?
Oh, that would be very handy, of course.
If there was anybody out there exactly, like to be associated with the only man who's climbed to the top of Everest, then contact him, because he could do with a bit of sponsorship. John, from the spiritual side, when you stood on the top of Everest, did anything strike you?
Yeah, it is. Mountaineering is a very spiritual experience, really, because you know you're thinking all the time. Really, you think of people before you, your parents or your grandparents, and all people like that would come into your mind. You know, it certainly is a very spiritual place.
The fact that you have climbed it now is a little bit of a void there, that you have achieved that and that's done. I can't go any higher.
There is certainly a bit of a void there, all right, yeah, but you still have the urge to go and climb again, like, you know.
Yeah. Come here, you're very fit, man. What weight are you?
I'm just over 11 stone.
Over 11 stone, yeah, as the fellas said, they're picking you, they wouldn't want to be for that. Who were your heroes growing up?
I suppose I learned about my major hero, I suppose it would be Tom Crean. I learned about him probably late in life, because we never learned anything about Tom in school or geography and like that, because he was a remarkable man, like, in his day, like, you know. He would be probably my main hero, I'd say, Kerry at the moment, it would be Tom Crean, like.
Yeah.
You know, like, Tom was a very colourful man, like, you know. Did they say what would make Tom Crean... That would make Tom Crean blush, would make a butcher dog drop his bone. He was that type of a man, like. So.
Yeah. Anyone else, John?
Of course, Pat Falvey, I suppose you could see that Pat has done a lot, and my friend Claire O'Leary is
good. She's the doctor from
Cork. That's right, yeah, she's a great climber, yeah. It's just great to be climbing with those there. And I suppose we have a lot of guys in the rescue team who are equally as experienced, you know, in mountaineering, like, so. You know, we have a good bunch. I have a good pool of friends to draw experience from, you know.
And friends, your friends down in Tarmans, Seamus, Mary, Jamie and Jim O'Shea, says best wishes to John. your neighbours down there. What was the most fearful? Was there any time, John, in the climb that you were in critical danger?
I suppose the ice fall would have been the more scariest part of it, really, for me.
Explain that to us.
Do you know, when you're going through the head of the glacier, like, you know, it has these towering blocks of ice that are moving forward all the time, like, and they're extremely dangerous, you know. They can topple over at any time. Yeah. That is probably one of the most frightening parts of the mountain, really.
And, of course, you have no control over that. You're passing them and you're going through it and you have no control, really. Is it a bit of a lottery?
It is, actually, yeah. Yeah, even now this year there was a serious accident on the ice fall this year. And every year there's always problems on the ice fall.
Yeah.
And there's no way of avoiding it, the ice fall, because it's the only entrance to the Western Comb for the south side of Everest. Like.
John Dowd from Tarmans in Waterville, why did you climb Everest?
I suppose that's a hard question.
Some fella gave an answer one time, because it's there.
I know, yeah.
You climb it, John?
I suppose it was a challenge, really. And I was progressing in mountaineering, and I suppose Everest is the ultimate challenge, really. I suppose that's why you went for it, really.
Yeah. When you came back, you had a great homecoming.
That's right, yeah. There was Dyer D. Waterfield put on a big homecoming for me. It was really appreciated.
Yeah. Of course, South Kerry and Kerry, John, they have produced some great heroes and great people down through the decades and down through the centuries. Do you think that there's something in Kerry people that make them adventurers and make them great sports people in all sports?
Yeah, I guess they are. They're into all sorts of sports, really. The people are very interested in sport, of all sorts of sport, like. And I think every year there's always somebody coming forward, even in the footballing side, there's always a good footballer in some part of the country making a name for himself. And
now, John, what's your next big achievement or your next big dedicated climb? Because are you going somewhere with Pat Falvey this
year? Yeah, well, Pat and Claire, we were discussing on a trip to the North Pole, but it's a big an adventure, really. It requires a lot of capital, so I think that might be an obstacle to me. Just hope I might overcome it in the next few months. Hopefully, look for some sponsorship and trying to achieve that. And if I could achieve that, it would be major, really.
Well, I'll be back next Monday night with Terrace Talk, and when I leave you tonight, John, I'm hoping to meet up with another a kind of a remarkable man. The man who was the mascot at 7 years old in the polo grounds in 1947 is home from American holidays in Killarney. I am hoping to meet him tonight and have his story for Terrace Talk. John Dowd, listen to me, to you and your wife and your family, congratulations and well done. It was a remarkable achievement. The only Kerry man to do, to summit Mount Everest on the 21st of May 08. John Dowd, you're at the top of the world. Well done.
Thank you, Michelle.